south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Well, let's see how to start this thing today. I remember now. I woke up this morning thinking, what can I be oversensitive about today? You know, since I'm of German ancestry, there are things all over the place that are totally insulting to my heritage. Don't believe it? Take the sauerkraut aisle in Walmart. Now, that totally offends me. Then there's all those Harley guys driving around with those World War II infantry helmets. I know, they're cool looking, but man, that hurts my feelings. Everywhere I go, there are subliminal signs of people rubbing it in that the Germans lost World War I and World War II and that they're a nasty race of Teutonic warmongers. Where's my support group? I'm sure I can find one on the internet. Maybe even get a grant from Bill Gates or Soros. And what about those 5-gallon outdoor gas cans? Jerry cans, they call them. Yeah, that's right. Jerry's. Krauts, I know people are whispering the J and the K word behind my back. You got no right to the J or the K word, unless, of course, you've got some German blood. Then you get a pass. Then you could even sprinkle them in your Teutonic rap songs. Hey, by the way, any of you guys out there have Soros' email? Oh, and by the way, the other day someone asked me if I believe in ETs, aliens, extraterrestrial civilizations and all that. And I said, you know, statistics overwhelmingly support that. I believe they're around, all right, but I don't believe they ever made it to another planet. Simply because I think at a certain point, when they got so evolved that they discovered social media, they extinguished themselves or simply auto-lobotomized. What do you think? I mean, we're well on our way now, aren't we? Oh, and here's something you never hear discussed. You know, to be president of the U.S., you have to be 35 years old. That's not right. That's blatant reverse ageism. Those are old, dead white man rules, don't you know? How about we strike that from the Constitution and allow 6-, 7-, and 8-year-olds to be president? I know. The case can be made. That has already happened more than a few times. Mentally, that is. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to tell you. A couple of shows ago, I was talking about I was at a Hard Rock Hotel all-inclusive. If you heard that one, you heard me complain it was nothing to write home about. Well, at one of the events, you know, they have lots of events at those all-inclusives, like stuff for kids at the pool, water sports, games, shows for adults, and of course, a couple of casinos. Well, at the casino, they were having some kind of Marlboro cigarette promotion. Yep, they were giving away free hats and t-shirts. They had some hot girls in skimpy outfits dressed as cowgirls. And of course, a tall, dark, and handsome Latino version of the Marlboro Man, all dressed up in chaps, 10-gallon hat, the whole works. And I got to thinking, Marlboro Man? That wouldn't be allowed up in the States. That would have to be Marlboro Person, right? I don't get it, man. The world has gone stupid. This hypersensitivity crap has become so stupid, but then again, stupid is the new normal, right? So then why did I start out the show today with this kind of a rant? Because of this email. You got to hear this one. This is from Calvin, and Calvin's a bit testy today. He says, oh, Johnny, have I got a gripe about what matters and what doesn't matter. It's like so many other things. What matters and what doesn't matter is in the eye of the beholder. Especially in this world awash with plastic surgery and sex, selling everything from cigarettes to perfume to Fruit Loops. Wait a minute, Cal. Johnny here. Can you still say Fruit Loops? How about Vegetable Loops? I guess that would offend certain mentally handicapped people, too. Can't have that. Can't be taking a blowtorch to a snowflake. I got it. Veggie Loops. There you go. That won't offend anybody. At least for now, anyway. All right, then, Cal says. Johnny, it's a fact that the bigger a woman's bra size, the more doors are open to her. That's a fact. And the more favoritism she's afforded in most every walk of life. Except possibly in church, though. Maybe not. Though especially in the media and in the entertainment world, where the pressure's on to get a boob, nose, or butt job. And Johnny, it's also a fact that in many cultures, plastic surgery is a rite of passage for girls in both the USA and with upscale classes in countries like Colombia and Venezuela and Brazil. In fact, many Asians are now getting their eyes westernized as a rite of passage, too. All right, meet Johnny here interrupting for a second just to tell you a little boobs on the ground story. I mean, boots. That's something to be avoided at all costs, huh, ladies? Boobs on the ground? Anyway, in every Latin American city, they've got a number of malls. They're called Centro Comerciales, commercial centers. And if you ask someone what's the highest-end mall in the city, they'll know it by name right away. It's the mall with the nicest cars in the parking lot, the most high-end gringo franchises. It's always a fashion show for the rich and a place to be seen. Now, in Guatemala City, for example, a city of a couple of million, the most upscale mall where the wealthy ladies and gents go to be seen and hang out. It's called Fontabella Mall. It's even got a Maserati and Lotus dealership inside. Well, it's also a fact that they've got many upscale, high-end boutique restaurants there, too, where it seems to be the fashion on certain days of the week, especially Sunday, for young teenage girls who've just had a nose job to make an appearance. That's why on practically every Sunday morning, if you walk through the place, you're bound to see a young lady or two or ten with that telltale little white bandage over the bridge of her nose, and maybe even a black eye or two. Hey, that happens. It's one of the secondary effects when you get your nose busted up or reset, whether on purpose, by accident, or by paying a surgeon. Oh, and by the way, I have a couple of Latino gay friends, too. And they're always talking about when they get the money, they're going to get a nose job. I'm not kidding. It's kind of funny, too, because their noses are all right. I'm the guy with the big honker. And I got the dough, and I never gave much thought to having mine fixed. So then what's that got to do with anything? Well, that's just another little useless piece of information you pick up along the way when you've been down in Latin America for as many years as I've been. Oh, and one of these guys who owns a chain of very successful beauty parlors, he says, every gay guy he knows wants his nose fixed, even the ones who've already had their noses fixed. So what's it like up by you? So anyway, Cal goes on to say, you'd think in a fairer and logical world, no one in history would ever get successful and filthy rich by doing nothing but sitting on their enormous silicone-enhanced rear ends. But then a decade or so ago, out of nowhere came the Kardashians. So, Johnny, here's my gripe. Women with enhanced boobs, butts, and lips get a leg up and preferential treatment in this world. Fact is, a guy could have a really big Jones, and they have operations for such things, I understand. Yet he gets absolutely no leg up at all. No pun intended. A big Schwanz opens no doors in the real world, except, of course, on the fringes and porno fantasy land. But that doesn't count with polite society, whatever that is. Though you hear lots of ladies on the internet and in Hollywood movies saying big dicks matter, but I don't believe it. Unfortunately, it seems to be a myth. What are they supposed to matter about? So then, where's the BDM support groups? I checked on Google and you just can't find them. So in reality, big dicks don't matter, no matter what you've heard. And though I'm sure you can start your own activist group, there are just too many clubs to join. And you have to pick the battles you know you can win. And the BDM battle for most guys was already lost in the gene pool the moment you were conceived. In the meantime, I'm off to the pharmacy, Johnny. One of the few positive effects of this virus thing is that it's a lot easier and less embarrassing these days for a good Catholic boy like me to walk right up to the lady at the counter of the pharmacy, plunk down a sawbuck, and buy condoms. Now that you have to wear a mask every day is like Halloween. Oh, and Johnny, one last thing off topic. You talk about guns in Latin America, and how only in three countries they're really not allowed. Cuba, Venezuela, and Mexico. Well, Johnny, I'd just like to say if it weren't for guns, you know, we wouldn't be here right now. American people fended off Britain from taking us over, not with fists or butter knives. If you read your history, you'll find even the ladies and young kids back then knew how to lock and load. Signed, Cal from Missouri. P.S., Johnny, I don't suppose you'll be reading this on the air due to sensitive subject matter, as the disclaimers always say on TV. Well, Cal, I read it, and I'll tell you why. It reminded me of a couple of instances where my own Latina girlfriend or girlfriends were absolutely shocked to hear that up in the States, a guy will buy Tampax, tampons, and sanitary napkins for his girlfriend, wife, mother, whatever, if it appears on the grocery store shopping list. I mean, come on. I'm sure everyone listening to this program has done that for one of his girlfriend's mother, whatever. Well, as it turns out, because of the deeply ingrained strain of machoism here in Latin America, you'll never see a male, a Latino, buy a tampon, Tampax, or sanitary napkin. It's an unwritten rule and absolutely verboten. In fact, I first noticed this weirdness some years ago when I was shopping in a big grocery store with my girlfriend. We were loading up the cart, going through aisle after aisle. She tossed a pack of tampons or whatever into the cart. And when we got to the checkout, she grabbed them, walked ahead of me, pulled some dough from her purse, and bought them herself. She explained to me later that it's just not right for a guy to buy that stuff. She was being thoughtful and didn't want to embarrass me, she said, though I was totally clueless of her intent. Man, the crazy stuff you learn when you're living down here a long time. Oh, and now's a good time to mention that I don't want to turn this show into a Lonely Hearts Club thing for gringos and gringas that are coming down Latin America, though I certainly could do it. You should see all the questions I get from people about mating, dating, love, and romance. I get it from both angles. Gringos looking to hook up with Latinas and from gringas wanting to hook up with Latinos. So never fear, I will be doing an upcoming show diving deep into the mating, dating, love, and romance thing here. Because you know it's on a lot of expat, gringo, gringa, gonna-bes, and wannabes. So hang on, we'll be hitting that subject hard shortly. Oh, and a disclaimer here. If you're the sensitive type, you might want to skip that show. But I guarantee it will be amusing. All right, moving on. You know, a couple of shows ago, I mentioned that there's a huge increase in American expats renouncing their U.S. citizenship. And, you know, I keep on the stuff and the claptrap data coming out of the mainstream media. And, you know, there's a lot to hate and distrust about the regular news. And one thing that particularly bothers me is the fact that every time I see an article about more and more gringos and expats renouncing their citizenship, it seems like somewhere in that article or blog, they say people are leaving because of Trump. In fact, you see that so often. It's as if the same guy or news service is writing the same article or putting out the same press blurb. Well, I'm here to tell you right now, that's total misinformation. Oh, and I'm not saying that when Trump got elected, a lot of people didn't claim they were going to get the hell out of the U.S. and renounce. You heard that from practically every media outfit coming out of Hollywood. Truth be told, if everyone who said they were going to leave the United States when Trump got elected, if they really had gone, California would be a ghost state. But no one left. Even the big talentless blabbermouths like Whoopi Goldberg, who kept saying it over and over again. She and the rest of them are still sitting pretty in Hollywood. Truth be told, just as many non-Hollywood people said they were going to leave the United States if Obama got elected. Many of them actually did get the hell out, with a good percentage of them renouncing their citizenship. So to set you straight on the facts regarding renouncing U.S. citizenship, there always was a small trickle of people renouncing until around 2010. Then it began to snowball when the Obama administration passed the notorious Foreign Account Tax Compliant Act, that's FATCA, inflicting accounting misery on U.S. expats everywhere. Then in 2014, the U.S. government raised the renunciation fee from $450 to $2,350. And they slapped on a massive exit tax, too. That said, let me excerpt this brand new article that just came out talking about that very thing. It says, and I'll paraphrase as usual to cut out the boring stuff. It says, now it may be true that most expats aren't crazy about Trump. Americans abroad tend to be, however, cosmopolitan professionals, often married to foreigners or following international career paths, as well as a large proportion of expats who happen to be retired people living on pensions and Social Security. But the fact is, when expats these days watch their home country news or talk about the U.S. and what's happening there at local dinner parties, just in the last couple of years, it stopped being fun and entertaining. It's gotten damn serious, with so many millions of expats now wondering which countries are really the banana republics. But neither Trump or Obama were not the reasons why so many expats have been trying to drop their nationality in the last decade. It's the system. The nightmare of American tax and financial reporting has hit them hard. With the fact that any account or asset deemed in Washington, D.C. to be foreign instantly puts you on a list and makes you and yours a suspect, automatically requiring extra disclosures that can be ruinous in time, expense, and peace of mind. The fact is, the U.S. is almost unique in the world in taxing its citizens on their nationality versus taxing them like every other country does, where they reside. The U.S. government is also uniquely parochial in being unable or unwilling to distinguish between, say, rich Americans living stateside and stashing money offshore in a Panama bank account versus a middle-class American who happens to be married to a German and teaching elementary school in Germany. And all hell starts right there with that conflation of problems. The U.S. bureaucracy makes no distinction. The fact is, before 2010, American citizen-based taxation didn't necessarily disrupt the life of an expat, let's say, teaching English in Panama. That's because very few expats even knew about the horrendously complicated reporting rules or bothered with them, because they came online just recently. But FATCA, which raised its ugly head in the early 2000s, required everyone living overseas to make new and redundant disclosures or face the prospect of tens of thousands of dollars in fines, even prison. And here's the kicker. It also requires all foreign banks, brokers, and insurers to report gringos living abroad to the IRS or face draconian measures and sanctions like being kicked out of the SWIFT international money transfer system, which to a bank would be like taking a bullet in the head. So it's no surprise at all that most foreign banks and brokers have stopped taking U.S. persons and green card holders as customers. And that has locked out many American expats living overseas from being able to do retail finance in their new countries. Worse yet, the European Union now has started passing laws with bureaucratically sublime names such as MIFID2 and PRP2PS that impose new similar rules on everything from mutual funds to life insurance. And all this has scared the banks and brokers who have American expat clients living in Europe, too. So now they've all started to kick out their customers who've got U.S. ties, nationalities, or clients who live even part-time out of the U.S. with dual addresses, leaving expat Americans financially marooned. In their desperation, several U.S. citizens living overseas have been taking their struggle to the courts. One, Fabian Langre, a French citizen who is also an accidental American because he was born in California, wants to invoke and use the European Union's data privacy laws to try to have FATCA declared illegal in Europe. Good luck with that. You go against Big Brother, there are few victories. But on the whole, a new feeling is arising with Americans abroad. They feel ostracized by their own country, more and more angry and agitated every time they read the paper or see the news. And get this, it says of the estimated 9 million Americans living overseas, if they happen to be a political group or a bloc, which they aren't, they'd be able to wield tremendous political power, being that 9 million people would rank them ahead of 40 U.S. states by population. But they have no such organization, support groups, or paid lobbyists in Washington. Of course, it's unfair discrimination against expats abroad, but they don't have power or advocacy. That's why the U.S. tax bureaucracy keeps bearing down on them. And so the citizenship renunciation snowball continues to roll and pick up speed. And now from the What You Didn't Know department, and probably never would, except for the fact that someone in government read a musty old file tucked away for years and was so amazed and flabbergasted, he leaked it. Listen to this. Did you know there was an Israeli plan in 1969 to resettle 60,000 Muslim Palestinians in Paraguay? And the guy who found this stuff, a senior reporter for Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation, says, quote, "The extent and the numbers and the methodology used for this plan is quite amazing." Then it says the Israeli government concocted the secret plan knowing there would be many problems in their newly acquired Palestinian Muslim Gaza Strip. So the question was, what to do with the Palestinian Arabs that came under Jewish rule? The people were sure to resist. Well, they gave the job to Israeli spy agency Mossad, who did come up with an ingenious solution. They knew Paraguay had a strongman dictatorship, who they could make a deal with monetarily. So the Mossad brokered a secret agreement through the Paraguayan Institute of Agriculture and Immigration to absorb 60,000 Arab Muslims over a period of 4 years. The plan guaranteed Israel would cover the immigrants' travel expenses and would give them each $700 in 2020 dollars. And the Paraguayan government would get $250 in today's currency per person. And get this, on arrival, Palestinians would receive Paraguayan residency rights, and after 5 years, they'd get citizenship and passport. Then it says, according to official Israeli documents, a down payment of $350,000 was made for the first 10,000 immigrants. That's about $3 million in today's funny money dollars. The total bill estimated at $33 million back then. That's a little over $250 million in today's funny money. And the Israeli government even set up a travel agency in Gaza to entice Palestinians and provide them with relevant documentation. Then it says, through the human rights lens of 2020, the plan may appear shocking, but we're talking about a different time over 50 years ago. So then what went wrong? Well, the plan actually got off the ground with the first 30 Palestinians, making the 7,000-mile journey. But it all came to a grinding halt when two of the first 30 guys walked into the Israeli embassy in Asunción, Paraguay, and shot a young clerk. And that, by the way, was considered the first act of Palestinian terrorism against an Israeli abroad. Anyway, after the guy got shot, it created a huge scandal around the Paraguayan resettlement plan, and the project was aborted. Though, if all would have gone well and according to plan, it's been calculated with birth rate statistics, Paraguay would now be a majority Muslim country. Man, the things you never knew and we never find out till generations have passed, huh? Speaking of things you never knew about Latin America's past, how about this one? I like to call it Things About Latin America You Never Learned in History Class. Did you know that Dominican Republic came within a hair's breadth of being a U.S. state? It came so close. No, I'm not talking about Haiti. That's on the other side of the island of Hispaniola. I'm talking about the DR. Now, back in the 1860s and 70s, the DR wasn't called the Dominican Republic. It was just called Santo Domingo. That's what the capital city's called now. But before then, the whole country was called Santo Domingo. In a way, I can understand why they don't tell this story, because I'm sure lots of sensitive people are going to get pissed when they hear this. But it's true. I'll start out by saying that before the Emancipation Proclamation, Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, headed a group that wanted to permit export of freed slaves to a country in Africa, fearing that the South would never incorporate freed slaves into their society and economy. That was his plan B. However, once the slaves were freed and they could vote, the consensus amongst the blacks was that they were citizens with rights in the States and they didn't want to go anywhere. However, after a few years and the KKK atrocities started in the South, and all that resentment that came about down South too, the former plantation owners and aristocrats just wouldn't accept Negroes as fully emancipated citizens. Well, after Lincoln was shot, his African plan died, and Johnson, his vice president, came in, and he was a terrible president and was impeached. Then General U.S. Grant was elected for 2 terms. But he found he had to continuously send troops down south to counter the KKK tortures and hangings and all that. And the fact that there were 2 southern states that now suddenly had new black voting populations that were greater than the white populations. And that didn't go down well at all with the old guard. And one of the main KKK goals was to stop blacks from voting in black congressmen and senators. So they scared the black population off at the polls. So in 1869, Grant had a plan. He believed all territories in the Americas would eventually become free of their European masters, including all the islands in the Caribbean. And he thought many of them, once free, would be annexed by the U.S. as new states. After all, there were French, Spanish, Dutch, and Portuguese territories and settlements all over the Caribbean that were starting to gain independence, beginning with Haiti in 1804 and the DR in 1844. So in 1869, President Grant sent a committee of senators to the Dominican Republic, known as Santo Domingo back then, and had secret deliberations with the president for the U.S. to absorb the Dominican Republic as a new U.S. territory leading to statehood. And when they got back to the U.S., they had a treaty, an agreement, to sign and make it legal. But before the vote, they had to debate it in Congress. And here's the congressional record of what Grant said. He said, Santo Domingo, which is the Dominican Republic now, does have fewer than 120,000 inhabitants. On the other hand, it could support a population of 10 million. It possesses rich and fertile soil, excellent harbors, and wonderful climate, and the greatest abundance of forests and mines. He said the free labor market in Santo Domingo would sound the death knell for slavery in Puerto Rico and Cuba, both still with slavery, as escaped slaves would find sanctuary there. He said, Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, should belong to us. There is not one sound argument against annexation. By the way, the president of the DR held a referendum, and they overwhelmingly agreed that they wanted to be a U.S. possession and then a state. However, the big reason why Grant wanted Santo Domingo so much was, as he said, and this is a quote, in having Santo Domingo, as a U.S. state, the emancipated race of the South would have found there a congenial home where their civil rights might stand unimpaired, unquote. And yes, even the great black leader of the time, Frederick Douglass, visited the island on that Senate fact-finding commission, and he said he was all for the idea and thought Santo Domingo's annexation as a state would strike a blow where slavery still existed and raise the world's opinion of the mental and moral possibilities of the colored race. By the way, back in those days, around 1870, did you know that Brazil had an emperor? So then you might ask, why isn't the DR a state right now? Because one guy killed it in the Senate, Senator Charles Sumner from Massachusetts. He was the one guy they needed as a swing vote. And he asked Grant in a private audience to give one of his buddies a patronage job as a quid pro quo for his vote on the annexation of the Dominican Republic. Well, it turns out U.S. Grant had some foul dealings with the guy that Sumner wanted him to appoint, and Grant wouldn't do it. So it was a Mexican standoff, and Sumner voted it down. So simply because Grant wouldn't appoint a guy he didn't like as a favor for Sumner's vote, today, the DR remains an independent third-world Latin country. So in the end, Grant and all the rest of Congress, besides the Sumner guy, wanted the DR as an escape valve for black emancipated slaves, a place, a state they could freely go to where they wouldn't be screwed with at all. Now, I know just me telling you this right now is going to piss off a lot of people because everyone's so pathologically sensitive. If you want, I'll give you the links to all this. And really, it's a lot more interesting than the little snippets I've given you right now. It's just that I don't have time to lay it all out for you here. Oh, and why did I mention Brazil? Because Brazil was the last country in the Western world to abolish slavery. It was 1888. And here's something else that's funny. In 1876, the U.S. Centennial, the first World's Fair, was held in Philadelphia. Didn't call it a World's Fair. They call it a Centennial Fair. It made more sense. Anyway, on May 10th, 1876, with a crowd of 186,000 on hand, U.S. Grant opened the fair by cutting a ribbon and making a speech with the Emperor and Empress of Brazil, even though it was a full 12 years before Brazil abolished slavery. All right, that said, just a little bit of breaking news. I just found out that September 18th, Guatemala's airport will be open for all visitors. So jot that down. And remember, my next Expat Insider Seminar will be in Guatemala and El Salvador, January 8th through the 14th, 2021. For all the details and sign-up info, just go to expatplanb.com. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.